Welcome, everyone. I'm Meg.
And I'm Jess, and you're listening to Post-Concert Depression.
We are here to discuss all things surrounding concerts, following bands, music, and anything else under the sun.
Join in for some undiscussed aspects of the music world while also laughing your butt off.
Let's do it. Welcome back, everyone. This week, we have part two of our episode with Rivertown Saints.
To recap the last episode, we left off talking about listening to Spotify and not pigeonholing yourself, and how Rivertown Saints didn't want to be stuck in a box when it came to their music.
Here we go with part two.
Well, what you were just talking about, a question popped up in my mind. Do you guys enjoy writing and recording music more or touring more?
I mean, it's all kind of full circle. I love all of it. It's so fun to be creative and to be in the studio making music, but also being on the road is just like, well, to quote Jeremy... Actually, what do you always say, Jeremy? It's like, you're basically allowed to be 17 the rest of your life. Like,
yeah, it's your license to be 18 for the rest of your life.
That's right. Yeah. Or at least legal drinking age. Like, it's just fun. You're not only playing shows to fans that love your music, which is just rewarding on its own, but you're hanging out with your friends and like just having, it's like being a kid again. Basically,
you're playing music and you're getting paid to travel, and you're having lots of free beers with other artists who you get to be friends with, and like, mm-hmm. and artists like, I don't know, man, like there was really no artists we never didn't get along with. And some of the American acts we played with were always like super cool. Like partied with Eli Young Band one time and they were awesome.
Partied with
Kip Moore a bunch of times. He was awesome.
We did a cross Canada tour with Kip, and that was a blast. The whole crew, like, I can't say a bad thing about any of those guys. Like, it was such a great experience. And we were like the opening band. It was a two bill. It was a two bill show every night. Two band show, like both of us and Kip. And we opened every night, and like, it was awesome. Like, I can't wait to do that again.
And I'll say this, like, you play with some artists who like are a little bit particular about, they really want you to know that you're the opener and they're the headliner.
There's a little bit of
insecurity there, I think, or whatever. And so
they don't want you to outshine them.
Yeah, I think there's, it's more so in the Canadian scene, I think, than the American scene. And again, because it's smaller, so those spots are more valuable. And so there's a little bit of like, they like to rouse you and make sure you know your place. But like, we went to, when we did the Kip thing, they saw us like rehearsing or doing our sound check. And they were kind of like, do you guys want to play for, like, we were originally supposed to play for like 25 minutes a night. And they're like, do you guys want to play for 40?
Yeah, we're like, okay,
sure, you know, like, yeah. Which would never, you know, there's other artists we tour with where they would be like, you go even like 25 minutes in 1 second and like
you're toast.
Kind of thing. And so they were just super gracious, and you know, they were always inviting us back onto the bus and stuff like that. And we said when we started out too, we were like, if we ever get there where we're headlining shows and, you know, we have a little bit of recognition or anything like that, we're like, let's make sure we're cool to other bands. Like, let's not ever be jerks about it and kind of thing. And then
douche canoe.
Yeah. And it was fun. So it was fun for us because 2017, 2018, we were playing a lot of like headline slots at fairs and some of the festivals and stuff like that, or direct support. And so, you know, we had artists that were opening for us, and we were just kind of like, it was really fun to be like, did you guys, you know, do you guys have a dressing room? And sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. We're like, well, come hang out in ours, you know. Yeah,
you guys have enough beer, you want more? Like,
yeah
it's all about, and you, I'm sure, like in the music scene, you hear about people who are not cool to work with and people who are really great to work with. And so just getting that like experience from you guys opening set the standard of, okay, we don't want to treat other people like this. Just really shows, like, again, your character and who you guys are. So
and I should clarify, like, even with our label, aside from the business side of it being a business, there's a ton of great people that worked there, and we became good friends with all of them. And like, I miss that more than I miss actually working with them, is just the correspondence with a lot of those people. But it's just it's an ugly business, and like, that's no one wants to hear that, and no one wants to talk about
it. Cutthroat.
Like, you're only as important as your last single.
Wow, that's very true. And so kind of focusing back on touring, do you guys have any pre or post show rituals? Like, do you get lit before a show or
never? No one in the band has ever done that.
We always eat pizza after the show. Like, there's always like a pizza waiting for us. It's on the rider. And then we proceed to pound another 24 beers after the 24 that we drank before the show or something like that.
There you go.
Our pre-show thing is the solo cup thing. I usually write, I always take 5 cups and I always write, depending where we're playing or what the show is, I make up names for all of us that like work with the theme of the show. So like, you know, if we play like an agricultural fair, I'll put cow names on the cups or something like that. Or
there you go.
We played a benefit concert for some like medical thing one time. So I wrote like medical conditions for all of our names and stuff. And kind of
is that like the cup you drink for the night?
Well, until you lose it.
Oh,
which we always run out of Dixie cups, which is solo cups.
Whatever. Yeah. But yeah, we don't, I think there's that. I mean, we don't do like a powwow or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But
I feel like that's a good routine. Some pizza and beers. Yeah. Solid.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't good. It wasn't good for us, but it was good.
Yeah. It was good in the moment.
Yeah. You can enjoy it.
We were all in better shape before we started this band.
We were so skinny.
Like, let's be honest.
So much McDonald's.
You guys look amazing. Don't even.
You do.
Oh God. Thank you.
All right. How about like when it comes to fans, have you ever had like a cringy fan moment?
Lots.
What is the most like standout one?
You go first, Chris. I got mine.
I don't. Thing is I can't.
Just do it. Just say it.
Okay. Well, I don't hope it's not the one Jeremy's gonna say. I got Jeremy. Is it the one you're gonna talk about where you were signing the?
Yeah. So there's two of them. They're kind of the same thing. Maybe this is just me though. This might actually just be a me thing.
It's a you problem.
Well, I don't know. See, all the cringy moments for me are like I just don't want to. It's just never mind.
You don't want to badmouth anyone?
I don't exactly. I don't want to like say anything cuz I don't want if someone's listening, I don't want them to like know who I'm talking about. So I'd rather not say.
Like, yeah. We've gone hard for some bands before and like my worst fear is being somebody's cringy moment.
yeah, exactly. I feel so bad like cuz there's so many, but anyway.
Go. Oh, you Canadians, you're so nice.
There's so many, but you can't say any. Got it.
Something like that.
I think.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
For me, the big one is so that first tour that we did when we were opening for Tim Hicks, maybe it might have been the first show. It was at Western, I think. And so we to try and like get our name out there, we made these postcards that said the band name and had a picture of us on them. Oh. And we'd play our set, and then we would walk around the crowd afterwards, and we would hand these out and say like, you know, like most people could clue in and be like, you're the band that just played. You're giving me the card, and it had our socials on it and our website and stuff like that. I handed it to a girl and she looks at me and she's like, what's this? And I was just like, ah, it's some info about the band. And she's like, looks at the picture of me on the card and then looks up at me and she's like, do you know these guys?
Oh my gosh.
And I was wearing the same shirt that I was in the picture. Photo. Like it was literally a mirror. And so I was just like, no, but they're really nice guys. And then the same thing happened in Cavendish. I was like standing side stage after we played, you know, with my lanyard, my little lanyard on my belt to me, because I felt super cool. I was just standing there like.
You're so official. Yeah.
You have to wear those when you're on tour.
Yeah. And a girl comes up. The girl comes up to me and she's like, hey, and I'm for sure thinking like she's going to ask me to sign something or whatever. I'm like, this is sweet. Like, I love that stuff. And so she comes up to me and she's like, do you know any of the guys in the Rivertown Saints?
Oh my God.
And I was like, I think I saw a couple of them backstage.
Stop.
And she's like, oh, I was hoping I could get this hat signed. And I was like, yeah, let me see if I can get that signed for you.
Okay, so we do this thing on the podcast where we do pet peeves, like concert pet peeves. And one of my pet peeves last week was when somebody comes to a show of a band and they don't have like basic knowledge. So like not knowing who the band members are, like that bothers me. Yeah. So like, oh, girl, that took some, wow.
That's like just a fear of mine too, to just look stupid like in that situation and just
she was pretty confident that I wasn't.
That makes it so much worse.
It's fun. Isn't it funny when you're like, yeah, no, I'm in the band. She's like, I don't think you are.
Has that happened?
No.
I mean, I guess I got what was coming to me for like being vain and wanting to, you know, get asked to sign something. So that was like my humility check right there. So,
Oh man.
I actually have one, and I wouldn't call that, this person was not a fan of the band, but we were in the middle of nowhere, Ontario. It was, what was the place called? Palmer Rapids. And there was this part of her set where there was an awful show. Yeah, yeah. It was.
Why was it bad?
We'll get to that.
But again, like it wasn't that bad. Like the people that were there to see the band were great. It was a good time for that. But this one particular person in the middle of our set, we always did like a medley, and there was always a rap part, which Dan would do because he's insanely good at rapping.
What?
So, I'm into that.
Yeah. I am so yeah. into that.
It was really, really cool, and people just went nuts. And of course, unfortunately, this one guy, because he, you know,
so this was pretty old. This was out in the country. This was like,
yeah. There's not a lot of diversity out there.
This was we'd say this was a traditional country area.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, probably a lot of Alan Jackson fans out here. Okay.
So this guy just starts like yelling at us, and I'm not going to tell you what he said. It was some vulgar language and some
racist.
It was very, very racist, and like flipping us off and stuff. And anyways, the bouncers like picked him up, and like, I mean, it was all outside, so they couldn't throw him out. I guess they just brought him to the gates, and he probably got back in. Like, it's not like, it's like in a field, right? There was no, it was pretty bushly.
With his Confederate t-shirt tied around his waist.
Yeah. So anyway, he was not a fan, but that was a very awkward moment because he's pointing at me for some reason. And so all I did was just flipped him off back because I'm...
It was pretty cool, though, that you did that. Yeah. That was actually amazing.
Yeah.
Because you were still playing guitar and just giving her...
Yeah. So...
But
good times. What a terrible man.
Palmer Rapids, it's like the middle of nowhere. Like
you had to bring your own toilet paper, and we didn't get the memo.
Yeah, like your cell phone doesn't work. This place is off the grid. And like the stage is this old rickety wooden thing that you can fall through. And like, anyways, we got there and we're like, is there a green room where we can like hang out and, you know, have some beers and change before we go on and stuff? And they were like, there's an old trailer in the woods, but it's first come, first serve. And we were the headliner. So we were kind of like, our tour manager was like, it's their trailer. But then we went in it, and it was like the roof was caving in, and someone had stapled a Canadian flag up to like keep the debris from falling down, and there was like ants everywhere, the windows didn't close, it was awful. And yeah, like Chris said, we're like where do we go to the bathroom? They're like, well, there's porta potties over there. And we're like, there's toilet paper in them. And the guy was like, what are you telling me for?
Yeah.
So
we were like, not going number two.
Yeah, apparently we were supposed to bring our own.
You bring your own. We're like, we didn't get the memo. And also, so, well, the good thing, though, about that for the crowd is it was BYOB, like bring your own booze.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So that's actually great.
It was like a trailer. It was like a RV camping sort of situation. So like,
yeah.
Like I think they did sell drinks on site, but no one was buying them. They were all just drinking their own.
Yeah. If you bring your own, why buy?
Everyone had coolers.
Oh, absolutely. Especially the price of like concert beers is insane. So.
Yeah. Hey, I would do crazy things to get an overpriced beer and a barricade right now.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Are you guys like, yeah, what's the state of things there locked? Because you guys are all about the like no mask mask, like that's a big thing down there. It's not as big of a thing here. So
it
but
is,
we're like,
yeah, it is, depends on where you go. Like,
right, yeah,
I had to go to Florida for a funeral a couple maybe like a month ago, and everyone was out doing their own thing as if nothing's happening, not wearing masks, and I was like, okay.
Yeah. Florida's pretty wild.
It was very weird. Because in Colorado, in Colorado and Ohio, I would say it's pretty, you know, there's standards and stuff, and everyone, you have to wear a mask wherever you go. Denver just got into more strict lockdown where
Toronto,
we can't eat
just
in restaurants.
That here too.
Yeah, but it's still, there's like some sort of mandates, but it's, Florida just seems to be doing its own thing.
But that's kind of always Florida, right? Like Florida's always doing its own thing.
That's a pretty accurate statement.
Yeah, but even like you get closer to Northern Ontario, and like Chase came down for rehearsals.
Yeah,
for...
our singer lives like in the Arctic.
Well, not.
Okay, what does that mean?
He lives in a place called Kirkland Lake, which is, from where I live, he's 5 hours, 5.5 hours away.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So but we're like near Ottawa, in Ottawa, but it's north.
The trees don't get very big. Like, it's crazy.
It's kind of tundra-y.
Yeah, there, it's right? Like it's getting tundra-y. Yeah. It's just a lot of spruce trees and giant mosquitoes. Yeah.
And so, but he came down and like we were going out to a restaurant because we can go in restaurants. Well, it changes on a monthly basis, but right now we can go into restaurants and eat in there. You wear your mask to the table. So we get out of the truck and we're walking into the restaurant and I just realized like we got right in. He's not wearing a mask. I'm like, dude, put your mask on. He's like, oh crap. So he had to go back to the truck and get it. Like he's like, man, we don't, like, you don't need any of that stuff where I live, but there's also like population not many there.
Yeah.
And nobody goes there for any reason.
Population like, not
if,
many.
Yeah, if coronavirus gets there, it's probably because he brought it from Ottawa. You know, well, I hope that doesn't happen.
I think the town he lives in is like the biggest town other than Timmins in all of Northern Ontario, and there's 8,500 people. Like it's
wow.
Yeah, so
that's crazy. All right.
Sorry, well. I'm like, do we want to do pet peeves?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we can.
Okay.
I know what your pet peeve is, Chris.
Mine?
Yeah, from when you...
So we've been doing concert pet peeves, like us attending a concert, but this is more for you guys touring and playing shows and whatever relates to that life.
I can give you both. My concert pet peeve is people who push you out of the way to try and get closer to the front.
We said that on our... We
feel that. Ago? I think yeah. that was, yeah, our
I
second episode.
Lose my... Like, I almost pushed a woman. That's how angry it makes me.
Well, because Meg and I, we followed this band around and we would always wait for front row. And it was always funny that people would think that they could get in front of us. And
make a plan behind us, like right in our ears and be like, okay, guys, so what we're going to do is we're going to push these girls out of the way and then we'll just slide into the front row.
We're
and
like, we can hear
I hear
you.
Everything you're saying, and that's not happening. I don't know where you think I'm going because it's packed full. So
it blew my mind that people would shove you. We played one year at Cavendish out on the East Coast in Canada, and Blake Shelton was the headliner, and we were like, we'll just go out in the crowd and watch. And like a woman came by me, and she was just like, push me out of the way. And like she was a tiny lady, and I thought like I could toss you back.
Oh my gosh!
But I didn't. But I was so angry. I was just like, if you want to be at the front, get there sooner. That's what you do.
Exactly. That's what we would always say.
Yes,
absolutely. You have to be first in line. You got to do the time to get
there. Yeah.
You can't just push.
So that was our off day. And we didn't have, like, when we're on a day that you're playing at the festival, you have full access to anywhere. So you had your bracelet, you could go anywhere. Well, that day the bracelet didn't work because they scan it or something. And we couldn't get, so we were trying to like navigate around there and we were so lost. We're like, wait, we can't go through here. No, that's VIP. You can't go through there. Your bracelet doesn't work. We're like, this sucks.
Terrible.
Man, it sucks being on in the pit with all the other fans. And I'm just kidding, but like it was just hard to get around.
Yeah,
we had no idea.
With
we're
all
like
the pedestrians.
It was very humbling.
We love the
very
peasants.
Humbling. Yeah,
we do too. We're nothing, man. It's great.
So my pet peeve, my pet peeve quickly that has nothing to do with music is when you're getting gas at the gas station and you're in there trying to pay for your gas.
The
and
lottery?
Someone is, yeah, playing Nevada tickets and lottery and they're checking their tickets and the thing keeps beeping. They keep buying more and they're in there for like 5 or 10 minutes. And I'm like,
literally happened to me yesterday.
Yeah. Sometimes I like, if I have cash and it's like an extra $5, I'm like, whatever. I just throw it down. I'm like, that's for pump six. See ya. But
that's
off topic.
That's so funny.
No, I know, but it like drives me insane.
It's more annoying now with coronavirus because you can't, at least before you could stand behind the person and like glare at them and like get in their space. Now you're like 6 feet away and the guy is just boop, boop.
Just living their life, living their best.
The OLG.
I thought for sure your pet peeve was going to be when you and I room together and I leave clothes.
Oh, I got lots. I mean, we could do a whole other podcast of that. But yeah, Jeremy, we get into a hotel room and Jeremy's suitcase, he unzips it and it literally explodes. It's everywhere.
That's literally me.
Oh yeah. And because we always come back late from like wherever we were and stuff. And there's always been a couple drinks. So I just drop it stuff on the floor. And then if we're staying there for 3 days, I'm not going to pick it up again till we leave.
Yeah.
I would you.
Exactly. Right?
Fair enough. Well, okay. So on the first tour, Jordan... We had a hotel, I think, for 2 nights, and it was like we got it with like LaBelle's mom's air miles because we were doing it like on the cheap. Jordan was putting his clothes neatly folded into the drawer in the hotel room. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? We're here for two
People
nights.
Do that?
Well, just
we're
just
leaving
Jordan.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, we're leaving tomorrow. Why are you doing that? He's like, I don't know. Like, there's a dresser here. Why not use it? I'm like, it's just to hold the TV, dude.
Jordan irons his shirts like before we play. He brings his shirts on a hanger. And then he gets at the ironing board in the hotel and he does it. Meanwhile, I literally just take mine from a bag all wrinkled and put it on. I'm like, this is
how Although I will say he does iron our shirts sometimes and sews buttons back on. So he's a great wife.
What a sweetie.
I think my non-concert pet peeve is when Dan was still around and we would fly, Chris would book our flights and he would book them alphabetically. My last name was Bortot, Dan's was DiGiacomo. So we always got seats beside each other and Dan was a bigger guy. And so I always got the window. So I was always like against the window because Dan took up the space. And so I was always curved on smaller planes, like along the window. And then Dan could fall asleep anywhere. And in the summer, he wore shorts like we all did. And so he would get in the plane and right away he'd fall asleep and he would like spread out and his leg would touch my leg. We were both in shorts. Oh. And so his skin of his leg would touch mine and he would sweat.
Oh my God.
And so like a 4 or 5 hour flight.
Sticky.
Yeah, 4 hour flight. I'm just trying not to make contact with his skin. And like there was times
and you're
where, like,
squished in the corner. Yeah,
my pants got like wet one time from his sweat and he would snore the whole time. Like literally the plane hasn't taken off and Dan's just like, like that was, I always, there was a couple times where I paid extra to change my seat.
Gosh.
Like the banding, I paid out of my own pocket to move my seat to like back by the bathrooms.
So you didn't have to sit by it.
Which Evan clearly was a better place to be. Actually, on that note too, with the flights, is that was another one of my pet peeves, is certain band members complaining about early mornings and early flights. And so
you should tell her though, we always booked the cheapest flight. If it was like 5 a.m., that's the one we were booking.
Yeah.
That's how you gotta do it.
Dan and LaBelle were like, man, like, why do we always have to have these early flights? Like, why can't you book something later on? We're like, because we picked the cheapest ones so that we can all maybe make more money or put it towards the band. I have no control over it. I'm just picking the cheapest one on there that makes sense for our schedule. And of course, it's just, there's always like the just nonstop complaining like the whole time. And I'm like, just deal with it. That's part of the
game.
That's
what it is. Yeah.
You can sleep. You can get up and sleep on an airplane or in the airport.
Yeah.
But
you have nothing to do today but sit.
I think we created that monster though, because like Dan and LaBelle were both awful drivers. And so we never let them drive the bus or the van. It was always me, Jordan, or Chris. And so I think they just got used to like being transported places in luxury. And so, yeah, the early flights, they like couldn't comprehend, you know, the inconvenience of it.
It's just the life. Got to get used to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, moving on, we wanted to ask you some this or that questions related to playing shows or, you know, being in a band. You guys can both answer. Well, I would hope. Do you guys prefer to play outdoor or indoor shows?
Depends on the weather. If it's like if it's nice out, outdoor all the way.
Yeah. But if it's really humid, indoor for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And then I think you've already covered this, but do you guys have some drinks before you perform, or do you prefer to do it sober?
I think everybody gets the whistle
beers.
Wet a little bit.
Three beers.
Yeah.
Before the show.
Two or three.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's like a point of no return where like when you start getting into 4 or 5, then you get the like, uh-oh.
Yeah,
and then you have to go on stage and you're going to sweat and move around, which is going to make it worse. And you're going to have 2 beers on stage. So it's like, I think we've all crossed that line once or twice and then learned like that
was early on.
Yeah, that's a long 90 minutes when you're just trying to keep it together.
Yeah. You're too gone.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then do you guys, after a show, do you like to meet fans or do you like to just recluse? Okay.
We always do. Always make a point to do a meet and greet. Obviously not now with COVID, but
yeah.
Before all this, we did it like every show we could, unless we had to leave right after.
It was sort of the same thing as the being nice to like bands that open for us. It was kind of like, you all hear those stories about the artists who, and I will say there's sometimes you have a bad day or whatever. They're human beings. But you all hear about those artists that like just want to get on the bus and they don't want to say hi to anybody or sign stuff. And it's just kind of like, you only get to do this because of those people.
Exactly.
And so we were kind of like, let's all never be jerks about that. Like, let's always make the effort when we can. And I really enjoyed it.
And I feel like you get to make someone's day. Like, I know personally as a fan, like, when you get to meet one of your favorite artists, it's, like, the best feeling in the world.
The best.
Like, Jess and I would leave after, like, a show and interacting with the artist, and, like, we would thrive off of that for our six-hour drive home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and yeah, you have, like, and especially if, like, you actually, you know, there's the got to meet them, and, like, if you get to chat with them for a couple of minutes or something like that about something real or whatever, like,
yeah,
that's the best thing. Like, that's,
and that conversation is going to stick in their mind.
Yeah. And even for us, like, I don't know about you, Chris, but being that how we've done stuff with music, we've been able to meet people, like, other artists sort of easier than we would if we weren't a band.
And yeah, people we looked up to. It's sweet.
Yeah, like, I like chatting with Jake Owen, like,
he's like a pretty down to earth guy, right?
He's super cool.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And so what's funny is we played this show, and one of the bands on it was Tom Cochran. That's a Canadian thing. I don't know. Do you guys know? You know Life is a Highway? You know the song Life is a Highway?
Yes.
Life is a highway.
But before Rascal Flatts covered it, he did the original.
Interesting. And okay, I didn't know that.
Not
Rascal
many
Flatts
people...
is from Ohio. Random yes, fact of knowledge.
But not many people outside of Canada would know Tom Cochran, and that's fine. But anyways, so he's like, as a Canadian, he's a big deal. And so if you liked the classic rock thing, and so I was standing side stage watching Tom Cochran play, this dude walks up to me in sandals and just dressed down, looks totally like normal dude. He was headlining later that night, and he walks up and he's standing there and he looks at me and he's like you like Tom Cochran? I was like, love Tom. And he's like, yeah, me too. And then silence for a minute, and then he's like, by the way, I'm Jake. And I was like, I know who you are, like, kind of thing. And so, you know, just chatted for a couple minutes side stage, and like that, you know, that's still as cool for me as it was when I was like a fan going to a show and getting to meet a band.
Yeah.
So,
oh, dude, you remember that time you and Jordan got invited up on Brad Paisley's stage, like, to that mini bar they had up there?
Yeah, that was awesome.
At that London show. So we opened, like, we weren't direct support. We were probably, like, it was us, another band, then Brad Paisley. But anyways, but he knew who we were and acknowledged us, which was really cool. And so I think Jeremy and Jordan were still up there because I don't remember, or they were talking with crew members or something. And Brad was beside the bus, and LaBelle and I were standing there, and his tour manager's like, hey, you want to meet Brad? We're like, yeah. So Brad's like, hey, Rivertown Saints, good show, guys. I heard some of it. And hey, but your couple of your guys were up. Yeah, there they are. You can kind of see.
Oh.
A couple of your guys messed up my fiddle player. He missed his solo. I had to fire him. We're like, no. And he's like, no, man, I'm just kidding. Like, it's just so funny because they're just like, they just love joking around, right?
So when Brad was on that tour, he had a bar on each side of the stage.
Uh-huh.
And so there was like a Twitter contest before each show where people would tweet something at Brad Paisley. And then, like, if they were at the concert, and then his tour manager would find those people that won and they'd get to come side stage, and they'd get to go up on the stage at the bar on stage and have a drink for a Brad Paisley song on stage.
I feel like Jake Owen does that too.
Yeah, he does. Same, similar vibe. His things are usually off to the side. Brad's are like literally on his stage. Like, so.
Wow.
But anyways, it was a small show for Brad. It was just London, Ontario. And I guess they didn't do the contest. And so at the like last minute, his guy was like, we just got to find people to drink at the bar. And so we were standing there watching. And so the guy comes over and he's like, you guys want to go have a couple drinks? And so we were just there for the whole show. And his fiddle player kept coming over to get a drink too. And he would come over and put his fiddle down and we'd start chatting. And then he'd be like, oh, I got to go. And then he'd like put his beer down, run out, play. And then he would come back. And it was like, it was a ton of fun. And then, yeah, there was
a cool experience.
There was a couple times he missed his cue because he was pounding beers with a bunch of Canadian boys. But
hey, that's not your fault.
No, not at all.
All right, next one is, when you're playing a show, do you like to go into the crowd or like jump off the stage, or would you prefer to just stay up on the stage the whole time?
I guess playing an instrument, it's not, you know, if you happen to jump into the crowd and get mauled for us, not that we would get mauled, but
but you might kill somebody.
Yeah. Like it's just, I'm always afraid of like my guitar going out of tune or something, but I always think it's cool, like for Chase to hop down and like run into the stage. So I think for a singer, like, heck yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool to see.
And big festivals always have sort of that.
The catwalk.
I call it the moat.
Yeah.
No man's land between the barricade and the stage. some of the smaller like club shows or just sort of, you know, more earthy more shows. Yeah, they'll have people like right up against the stage. And I always like that because you can, you know, can really ham it up and go down, kneel down in front, give somebody a pick. The pick thing is kind of a gamble when there's like a 4 foot or an 8 foot barricade because you're just basically throwing it at people. And, you know, I've hit people in the face or like, nothing's more embarrassing than when you throw a pick and it lands just inside the barricade and like some kids like
and then what, security picks it up and gives it to him?
Yeah, well, I mean,
or you find it after the show on the ground.
Oh yeah, you're lucky. We're like, one of our other pet peeves is the security.
Can't stand them.
Sometimes the security just comes out for the big band, so for us a lot of times there's no security.
Oh, rude. Gotta protect them all. But, and then I feel like you already said this as well, but do you prefer to write your own music or have it written for you?
It's always cool. Yeah, it's always cool to like to write your own stuff because it's like creative and it's like, oh, I created that. I made that. But realistically, a good song is a good song. And there's pitches that we get behind. We're like, this is awesome. Or if it's someone that you know that wrote it too, it's like, man, we want to cut your song. And they're stoked. And so like, a good song is a good song at the end of the day, and we can always put our own spin on it in the studio.
Well, yeah, it takes a life. It takes on a life of its own as soon as you put Rivertown Saints on it, right? Like someone writes it with their idea in mind. I mean, actually, Do Not Disturb is like, even though we co-wrote that, when we wrote it with Phil, it was like a totally different vibe. And then when we decided to self-produce that and I went through and sort of did it up how I thought it would go, I actually sent it to Phil and he was like, this is super cool. He's like, I didn't hear this at all when we wrote it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's fine. Like, some of our favorite songs have been written by writers and pitched to us. And then, you know, it's just, we always say the best song wins, whether it's us or someone else.
Yeah, that's a good attitude. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then would you prefer to, I don't know, do you guys always record at a studio or do you guys record at home too?
We've done both.
Both? Which do you prefer?
We call this a studio, but it's just my office with a bunch of guitars in it. Yeah.
Still something.
So, I mean, okay, so there's something about going to a legit studio with your whole band and recording everything. And I don't want to sound like old school or whatever, but like recording it organically.
There's a vibe.
To a sense, there's a vibe. But at the same time, this day and age, budgets are always small for music. And so it makes sense to do a lot of things at home. So, I mean, pre-COVID, because now, like right now, like our whole EP we did at home. We were all in our own houses and like Chase came over to my place where we cut vocals and like everything else was done at our homes. But that being said, even before that, prior to that, there was some stuff that we ended up like just extra like edits or vocal harmonies. I think we did at my place, or, you know, you had to we fixed some guitar stuff here and there at home.
It takes the romance out of it a little bit. You think of like bands going into the studio and all this stuff. And like, you know, every song we've ever done, we've gone and done a bunch in the studio and then we get home and like talking to the producer, he's like, actually, I was wondering if you do the harmony this way. And so like, you still end up singing in the closet.
However, I don't know. We're recording near the end of January, and we're working with a producer we've never worked with before, who's never done country before. So this will be quite interesting. But it's someone who we're a fan of all his work, and that might be the whole that's going to be the whole studio vibe. Like, hopefully, we can get it all done there for the most part. So
yeah,
but we'll see.
And you have to like pay for studio time and stuff, right?
Yeah. You pay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different. Sometimes you just pay like. Sometimes you pay a producer X number or X amount to do a song, and then he figures out what portion of that he'll charge for studio time, or works out a deal with the studio he works at. Like, yeah, sometimes you pay by hour and you're like, let's get out of here as quick as we can. And then other times you're like, this song's going to cost $5,000. And the producer, you know, if he owns a studio, he can just spend as much time as he wants. If he has a deal with the studio that he works at a lot, he can get a deal for you. Or a lot of times he'll just do drums in a studio and then you can do everything else in smaller studios. And so it kind of bums me out. Like, gone are the days of like camping out in some beautiful room for 3 weeks to, you know, do absolutely everything. And
remember the first place we went to as Rivertown Saints, we were at Pocket Studios, which was owned by a former Our Lady Peace guitarist. And
which again, you guys might not know.
Yeah.
they've had some international success in like the late 90s.
Well, Rain made a co-wrote some Carrie Underwood songs. That could be the
really.
Yeah, you didn't know that? Yeah, he's on a few of them. But anyways, long story short, that was really cool. But then like the studio closed like a couple months after.
Yeah.
I know that the guy that owned it was like talking about it. He's like, ah, man, I don't know if I can keep this thing going. And it's just, that's the day and age we're in. You know, a lot of studios in Toronto have closed shop. And I think even some have in Nashville. But like everyone's doing it from home now. But the gear is there. It's cheaper. And it, especially right now, like during this pandemic, could you imagine music right now if we didn't have this technology where we couldn't go to studios like during lockdown and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That would suck. Like we wouldn't have been able to put out our EP because like,
there's literally
recorded it.
Right. Like, where would you go?
Yeah.
There's literally like Grammy winning albums being made on laptops. Like all the Billie Eilish stuff, like her brother produced on a MacBook with one microphone.
It's cool that you don't need the studio to be able to put out music. It's giving more people more opportunity to just do it. Create. Rather than, you know, being limited to, oh, I can't pay for this, or I have to pay for studio time or whatever.
But I do miss the, like, you know, Led Zeppelin studio stories, like, you know, like being creative in that space, and the engineer was as much a part of the band as the band and stuff like that. I'm so sad that I miss that stuff.
I think we all truly want to experience that, but there's just no time or money for that.
Yeah, and labels, like with labels either, you know, it used to be, we hired when we went on tour, started 2017, Jordan couldn't come with us because his wife was having a baby. So we had to hire a drummer. So we hired an Ottawa guy here who's just like a barfly, but he was in a band called Artificial Joy Club that had a major label deal in the early 90s. And he was telling me like the budget for their first video was $150,000. like a label wouldn't spend $150,000 on your career now.
Yeah.
And they don't need to.
Right.
So it's just crazy, like the amount of money that used to be made off of selling albums and spent on artists.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Would you, so you have like your different eras in the band, but even overall, would you, when you're performing a show, do you prefer to perform your older like songs or some of your newer music?
I mean, you have to perform the older stuff because the fans love it, and that's why they maybe why they became fans of the band. And I truly enjoy playing the older stuff, most of it. But the new stuff now, I mean, because it's something that it's like the new chapter of our band, like I very much so want to move forward with that and play as much of that as we can personally.
Mm-hmm. I think the cool thing about the old stuff is that everyone knows it. So yeah. as exciting as it is to like bring us a new song to life and watch people experience it with you the first time, it's cool when you go out there and you know, you start into Cherry Bomb and everyone's singing mm-hmm. with you.
Yeah,
and like, and,
yeah.
and you know that they know. And like, that's, I don't know. That feels like you know, you've had an impact on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
In that instance. And so it's like, but Chris said this, like, I like both of them for different reasons, I think.
Cool. And then do you guys prefer to play an intimate show? Like you said, like the closer, smaller shows, or like a festival?
Earthy.
Yeah.
Well, those are
for
different reasons. It's the same thing. Like the festival experience is awesome because there's like a ton of screaming people and maybe people that haven't heard your band before that weren't fans, and then they see you play and they might become a fan.
Mm-hmm.
But the intimate thing I've always enjoyed because I grew up playing smaller shows. Like I was in, you know, like a cover band playing bars as a weekend warrior for years. And I still like the intimacy of that. And it doesn't mean that I'm not reaching for the stars. It just means that I just like that sort of style of show. And even acoustic shows, like just acoustic guitars and a cajon where you can kind of interact more with the crowd. I love that stuff. So for me, I like the smaller type shows, realistically.
Hockey arenas. Yeah, I just, there's something like, again, it just could be vanity, but there's no more feeling of having made it than
playing like a big show.
Playing in a, like, when you, there's rows of, when you look out and see the, you know, a stadium. I mean, it helps when there's people in it, but.
He's just talking about sound check.
Sorry?
So you're just talking about sound check. Sound check in an arena is great when you just see all the seats.
Yeah, that's cool too. But I like when we toured with Kip, Kip Moore, because that was all arenas. On the last show, I walked from the dressing room to backstage with my phone, and I was just like taking a video in case this never happens again, just in case.
Just like, to relive the moment.
Yeah, because like as a 14-year-old or 13-year-old when I started playing guitar, it was like that was what I envisioned as making it, was being on tour playing hockey arenas, you know?
Aww, and so fun.
Yeah.
Well, our last... Oh, Meg, you take it away.
Okay.
Take it
away, Meg. So at the end of every show, we do Artists of the Week. So in previous weeks, we've kind of shouted out an artist or a band that maybe doesn't have as much of a following as we think they should. So I think our Artist of the Week this week is going to be Rivertown Saints. So awesome. Everyone go check them out.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
tell everyone where they can find you, what you have, what's recent, all that stuff.
You can find us hanging outside the 7-Eleven begging for change.
Waiting to pay for your gas.
How many you have?
Waiting on a guy playing the lotto.
That's where they can find you. Okay.
Yeah.
RivertownSaints.com. All of our social media is just at Rivertown Saints. What do we got coming up? I mean, no one knows what's happening in 2021, I guess. But for us, at least, we're hitting the studio early January. We're going to do 3 songs. We might put that out as an EP on its own, or we might do 3 songs and then try to get another couple together and make it a bigger EP. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We're going to try to get on the road as much as we can, as much as possible next year. And
fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
You know, we're hoping for that, too. So yeah,
the vaccine tour.
We did it. We did a few drive-in shows, like drive-in movie theater shows this year, I think 3, like styles, and it worked pretty well. So if those are still going, I'm sure we'll be doing more next year if unfortunately we're still in the same
boat. Did you actually, you played live?
Yeah.
At the drive-in?
Yeah, so it's like there's a stage and everything, but instead of people standing there, there's just rows of cars.
Yeah.
Was that weird?
I feel like that would be so weird.
Yes, it was very weird.
What's weird is people honk instead of cheering.
that like distracts from the sound.
Well, it's just weird. You're like, you finish singing, man, and then and then you're like, okay, so we went from finishing Cherry Bomb to New York traffic. This is cool.
Would you guys do a virtual show? Is that like in the plans or no?
We've talked about it. We did a couple like acoustic virtual shows.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But some of we've seen some bands do really cool ones, like full production and everything.
I think that might be if it's starting to look like this is going to be going for, you know, another 6 months, we've been talking about it. So we just got to find the venue and the lighting rig and the place with good internet, I guess.
Yeah, there's a bit of an overhead to doing it. So we just have to, but I think it's totally worth it because.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll keep a lookout.
Yeah.
Go to my first
follow their socials so we can stay up to date on all the things coming.
And get us down to play in the States.
Yeah. Come. Please.
Hopefully. We love it. Hopefully with the change in your leadership, it'll be a little easier to cross the border next year.
Hopefully. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. 2020 is definitely a big question mark. So, but we thank you guys so much for talking to us. And
thank you guys so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. All right. I guess we're done.
Yeah. I was like, do we hang up now?
That awkward moment when no one knows they should leave the party. Well, see ya.
Hey, I guess we're done here.